Well, talk about your time as a paper pusher.
Oh, yeah. Like a lot of people in GovTech aren't qualified to do these jobs that they're saying they're doing. An ISSO role is an essential, you know, someone who's managing, like, the policies and the paperwork for a company. But at the same time, they also got to have the competence to know why they're writing certain policies and things, and it has to make sense.
So everybody's seen you on this show multiple times. They love when you come on the panels. We actually may be doing another, like, live New Year's panel or something if people want to get on there and talk. But for y'all don't know, man, this is Mr. Leon Clayton.
Nah, this guy.
Leotis Clayton.
You Henny.
That's fine.
That's Henny right here.
I'll take Henny over Lee. Lee. Hey, y'all know what's funny? You always can expect the dude best performance when there's a woman watching. So expect Lee to go for 25, 10, and 15 today.
Yeah, here we go.
But no, man, briefly, I want you to just tell some people about a quick background of you, high level. Then we'll actually get into the details. For the people that don't remember our episode, what was it, like almost 2 years ago?
Like I said, 2 years ago, came on here. That's when I was talking about doing security engineering work, coming from help desk, and was at a startup company doing DevOps and system administration at a smaller startup company, and then moved into DoD contracting, doing security engineering work. So yeah, it's been a constantly progressing last few years here. So yeah.
Cool, man. Like, so me and him are going to talk about a lot of different hot takes. This is a very spirited individual. He's trying to act a little shy now, but we're going to get him unearthed pretty soon. But if you're still right now on the video, welcome back to the show, episode 198. And I don't know, I might title it, Why You Want to Be a Hacker.
Yeah.
But if you rock with us, hit the thumbs up button, hit the bell icon, make sure you select all to be notified of everything that we drop. And also, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts at. Just listen to us on there and leave us a comment. Now, here's another trooper, guys. Like most of us, he started from the bottom. He started out doing help desk.
Yeah.
And it's funny, no matter how many people I bring on here who had to do help desk, who didn't have to do help desk, people with no skin in the game think help desk is beneath them.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, it depends, like everything else in life. Depends on the type of work you do, but help desk is definitely not where you stay at for too long, right? So don't know why people, you know, just try to, I mean, I do know why, people come in and see all the money that, you know, people who've been in for a while make, or what the influencers talk about, you know, hey, it's getting shorter and shorter every time I see ads now. It was 6 months. Now it's 3 days. You make your six figures after they talk to you over a Zoom call or whatever. Right. But yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, it depends on where you at. When you start a help desk, you learn a lot of good skills and things that you can build upon when you go into any other field. I mean, I think they all are transferable skills from help desk into what other field of tech that you are really interested in. You know, you learn a customer service, you learn a troubleshooting, which is always needed. I don't care what area you go into, you're still going to learn how to, or need the knowledge of how to talk to people and stuff. So, you know, if you don't get nothing else, you're definitely going to learn how to talk to people.
Yeah, but I can see if a person actually has some high income skills and they didn't want to do help desk. These people will be coming from an industry that's like more blue collar, with shout out to my blue collar folks, and don't want to just go grind it out and get some skills.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I say about this. If you don't want to do help desk, then that means you're going to do more upskilling on your own time, which, you know, takes longer if you want to see results, right? So people want to be working for a paycheck. So if you don't want to do help desk, that means in your free time you're labbing on your own, and that may take longer, you know, because
it's going to take much longer.
Because now you're trying to fill in that gap with non-enterprise related tools and things like that. So, yeah.
Not only that, and it's not 2020 through 2022 anymore.
Yeah.
So a lot of people not getting their fair shakes because a lot of companies have leaned out and they want people that actually got some type of experience. You don't, like, if you're trying to usurp help desk, unless you're going to possibly find an entry-level role that just says 0 to 2, You're not going to be able to get the grades that interns are given, or you possibly could try to find an apprenticeship. That's an underrated way of, to get into the industry. But for the most part, you're not going to have any stories to tell unless you already have some type of working experience. I don't care if it's from retail or not. I deal with people that will come to me, and they will take off some of that other experience. I'm like, nah, we need to draw on this experience, even though it's not tech-related. Hey, you saw some of them behavioral issues that they ask you a question. Hey, tell me about the time you had a disagreement with a coworker. How did you handle that? All those different things.
Yeah.
And if you take it off there, they're like, so what were you been doing if you finished school X amount of times? What have you been doing all this whole time? So it's just like a different way with these recruiters and everybody else think about getting into the industry.
Yep.
But now the fun part is I always mess with this, man. If y'all go back to our first episode, Lee got his first security job out here, and he tried to go to his current employer at the time, BOA, and was like, hey, can you match that? And he told him, the manager said, man, you making what our managers make. And what they was paying you at that time? No, I'm saying your first, that startup.
Yeah. Oh, the startup company, that was like 75. So I know Bank of America, I was help desk. I mean, it was good for help desk. So I was making like 25. So.
Okay, he's getting 50K for help desk. That ain't bad.
So, yeah, that's not too bad.
Better than what I was getting.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like $8 or.
Oh, no, I wasn't $8 for me. It was like, it went from like 17 to 20 for me.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, yeah. It was pretty, it was decent back then. I mean, you know, things wasn't as expensive as they are now, but.
Yeah, man. Then this man decided. So listen, guys, this is going to be a story about perseverance. Now, I'm going to put your business out there.
This guy go.
But he's always dedicated to being great. He used to drive. Right now, we're actually in Plano. He used to drive from Plano to Fort Worth by, what, 3-4 times a week?
Yep, four. Yep.
Yeah, so this is going into the – my last episode was titled, Would You Go Into the Office for $250,000?
Oh, yeah.
And all them people was like, I'm gonna take 120 to stay home. I'm gonna do this and that or whatever, right? And I'm like, y'all don't realize that people commute every day. It's a guy on TikTok right now, and maybe I can find a video. He commutes from Philly to Atlanta every day to go into the office.
Philly to Atlanta?
Yes. He flies and then takes a train into Atlanta and then get back home about 9 o'clock.
They paying for that?
He probably paying for that. That's he probably crazy. Was remote, and you know how they had them RTO things?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, because that's insane.
I would just get a relocation assistance to help out with that, to be honest. But no, he was dedicated to be great, and that's when – so actually, briefly, let's talk about – you talked about help desk. Talk about the startup real quick, and then we'll talk about – I don't know. Did you say some funny stuff happened with the startup? Like, do you keep up with the startup?
I used to, but yeah – and that was a whole slideshow, per se, because I wasn't there too long, and I think I left at the exact right time. I was there for like maybe 3 or 4 months, not even that long. But right after I left, it just all went downhill, and something with the CEO with money laundering or something he was doing with messing up with people's investment money, basically, is what he was doing that. Whole company.
So like some Ponzi scheme type
stuff? Yeah, Ponzi. That's exactly what it is. Ponzi scheme stuff. So that's what he was doing with this second company for like mortgage loans and things. So he left the he left the country and they couldn't find him no more. He just left everybody high and dry. By that time, I was already, you know, gone, and people was hitting me up like, hey, yeah, we're locked out of our computers. How did you? I'm like, I don't have the answers for y'all. That thing, that stuff should have already been there after I left. I mean, because it happened like a month or two after I left the company that it went all downhill. But, yeah, it was interesting. So, you know, as far as like the technical experience part of it.
But what did you actually do there?
Yeah, so it was titled as a system administrator role, right? So basically enabling accounts. Most of my stuff revolved around cloud stuff, so. You know, setting up cloud infrastructure things. So that's why I give it more of a DevOps thing, because I was working with dev teams on an application that the company had, similar to Turo, right? So we have an app, they had an application where you share your car for rent for other people. And basically, I was just mostly doing support for that application through the cloud backend services and, you know, as far as routing, permission management, all of those good things. So Yeah.
And I think that should be a fun episode to talk about. Like, I need to research startups that did stuff like that, like some Dark Nick Diaries type stuff. How many startups have ran off on the plug, raised this money, and then they started like just giving using it the wrong type of way.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, I didn't know much about the company when I started, but I looked up into the CEO at the time, and, I mean, he was doing this stuff for 20-plus years, so he was like he was a Canadian-based guy, so he was a respected mortgage partner in Canada. You know, he had a big name in Canada, so I don't know what happened in the last few years. He's been getting investments. Things wasn't planning out the way he had it planned or something.
Can you say his name, or you can't say his name?
I mean, it's... I forgot his name. I think it's like Greg. I had to look it up. Share. The company was share.co. So, I mean, it's all over the internet. So, it's like all you got to do is search the name share.co, and that's going to probably pull up his
They might bring you in for a 30 for 30.
Nah, man. Nah, they. Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. I'll say that much, but, you know.
Then after that, that's when, when you were at the startup, did you get training?
Oh no! Yeah, it was different because when I was at Bank of America, we did have like a 2-week training where they actually held your hand and showed you how everything worked. Like, hey, these are the type of calls you're gonna get. These are the knowledge articles. It was real good. Like, far as training goes, that was one of the best, you know, places I actually went to that actually had a dedicated, hey, this is exactly what you're gonna do. This. Anybody off the street, because a lot of people wasn't in tech that I was working with. It was grocery workers or something, fresh out of college, whatever their background was. But that training got them up to speed real quick on how to handle calls and things like that and get familiar with technology. But this startup company, nah. Because I was kind of lost my first couple of days after the HR day. You do the little HR videos like you do everywhere else. And I was just sitting there. I was like, what do I do? So I was the guy who was supposed to be my manager, but he wasn't really my manager. It was just a guy I was working with, basically. I asked him, like, hey, what do I do here? And then he said, okay, I'm going to set you up a meeting with the CTO. So CTO and that guy got on the call. He said, here you have free rim to do whatever you like. I'm like, okay. He said, hey, wherever you see there needs to be some improvement, improve it. You're open to use whatever tools you like, whatever you change, run it by us first, and we're going to give you the support you need. But, you know, whatever you feel as though that needs to have some intervening with, go ahead and take it. Or you see something you want to improve, go ahead and initiate it. So I'm like, okay, that was it. After that, I was just a lot more relaxed as to.
You know how many people would have just took that job and – not did nothing and got the check?
It was going to be hard there because is immediately after I started, they had a layoff of like half of the development team. So that was fun. I had to shut down their accounts because, you know, they was laying them off. And the guy I was working with, he was like, yeah, this is affecting just the development team. Shouldn't have no effect on us or whatever. I'm like, well, that's...
So who took over for the dev team?
It was just... They had it broken down, like in software development. You have people who do front end, back end, application stuff. So they went to basically, hey, I think the one remaining people, that's what the CTO told him. He said, the remaining people here are more than capable of doing full stack development. So, you know, instead of just doing one thing, they was now doing multiple things.
I see
things.
That didn't last long.
Yeah. So, it was just interesting. But yeah, as far as that part, just sit back and do nothing and get the check wasn't going to happen because I did get some follow-ups as to, okay, what I do today, anything I need help with. If I would have kept saying nothing, I did nothing, I don't need help with nothing, then that would have been like, why are we paying this guy? Like, what?
Listen, but you can say, well, y'all didn't tell me to do nothing. Somebody could get up because there are people. Remember, when was that we was having that conversation about dealing, and I'm not talking about you got a disability, right? But dealing with different people that got certain disabilities and different things of that nature, why you have to implicitly tell them what to do. Or like how in interviews, they don't know how to ask questions the right way. They ask them an open-ended question instead of being specific, and why a person may fail a question one way versus this way. if you take a very literal person and set them down there, they're like, well, you didn't tell me what to do.
Yeah, see, that's the wrong mindset in tech, though, right? Especially outside of the help desk, that's the initial starting point where you get tasked, like, hey, you do this, this is your job. When you start making these six-figure ranking jobs, a lot of teams are going to tell you that they're very IC-based or individual contributor-based, like, hey, like, you are fully autonomous. Nobody's going to tell you when to go to the bathroom. Nobody's going to tell you, hey, you get 30 minutes for lunch. Nobody's going to tell you these things. You got to get up and do these things yourself. You got to put in the time and know what, you know, where your skills lie at to start, you know, giving some contribution then. So, yeah, so they're going to tell you real quick, like, hey, yeah, all your projects is, you know, on you to get them done, right? You can always reach out for help, but if you don't do nothing, it's just sit there, okay, you didn't tell me nothing. They're like, well, we got to tell you goodbye.
So. Now, I can't remember, whenever we did that episode the last time, did you just become an ISO?
Yeah. Well, doing ISO stuff, then I was just becoming, like, on the engineering side, actually doing, like, the tool things. That's what I really wanted to do.
Well, talk about your time as a paper pusher.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, that's what a lot of people don't want to talk about. So I see it. A lot of people in tech and maybe private sector too, but especially GovTech, a lot of people in GovTech aren't qualified to do these jobs that they're saying they're doing. An ISO role is an essential, you know, someone who's managing, like, the policies and the paperwork for a company. But at the same time, they also got to have the competence to know why they're writing certain policies and things, and it has to make sense instead of just pulling some framework template down and just changing the name from X, Y, and Z company to ABC company and say we're going to call it good, because now when you start getting audited, they say, hey, well, you do these things, you say you have written here, but we don't see this stuff actually happening. But, yeah, so my time doing that was not what I thought it was going to be, right? So this is when I was, like, newer into the security things. ISO sounds like a cool title, information system security officer. I'm like, hey, I'm finna do some real, you know, some real security stuff, right? But, yeah, when it comes down to it, you know, they're mostly – run your policies and procedures, how things are done, how data is, you know, secured in X, Y, and Z. But, you know, I just feel as though my skills lie into more forward-thinking processes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Training. But, no, I know, like, so I worked the – how is that dude doing, man, the training dude?
Yeah, I just hit him up the other day. Yeah, he's still there. He's still yeah, project manager now, so.
You should have had him to come meet us.
Yeah, he'll talk your ear off. He had his own podcast. He should have kept it going, but yeah.
Everybody can't keep it going.
Yeah, man.
You see what episode number up there?
Yeah, it takes a lot of, you know, time. That's another thing with tech, you know. Take a lot of the time to actually get good at it, right? So a lot of people don't want to put in the time for it, so.
Yeah, so with that being said, do you feel like, so is an ISO role, you think it's gatekept? Because, you know, a lot of times you hear people get become an ISO because they got a SEC plus and they study RMF, and now they're ISO.
I mean, prior to this year and for the next coming years, it was like, hey, especially in the GovTech sector, right, everybody said, oh, you need a SEC plus or heartbeat, and you can get into a GovTech role, whether it be, you know, system administration or ISO, just have the right words on your resume to get pulled, and you just basically got the job. But now, I feel as though even your guy, what's his name? I think his name is Chris. His name is Chris, right?
Chris Akpala.
Yeah.
Take a walk.
Even he's talking about on, like, his post saying, hey, you got to come with much more than just being able to spit off some RMF words to get these jobs. They actually want you to. I also seen someone on Reddit talking about, hey, you know, that contract ended and it's been like 4 months since then. And every time he gets an interview, they asking him, what do you know about, you know, Linux and scripting and stuff? He's like, man, I just been doing paperwork these last 7 years, CSSP and RMF, so I really ain't had to do none of that. And they're finding out the hard way that those are not valuable skills, just being able to just write policy. You got to be able to do stuff. You got to be able to, I got to be able to hand you a keyboard and say, hey, all the stuff you got in your policy, show me. Do it. People can't do it. Can't do the work. They can talk about the work. A lot of people can talk about the frameworks all day, but as soon as you tell them, hey, do it. You say you got a IAM policy on AWS to restrict whatever type of login, whatever.
Policy.
Yeah, then I just pull it up. Show me. Log in and show me the configuration setting. Show me that's run this command and show me this. How do I do that? Right? So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I know. Like, there are the good things now with all these different tools. You can probably get that without even having to go into the console. But that's why, do you remember I made a post about it might have been a month or two ago when I was saying why I believe that, like, SOC and IR people, and even help desk people, would make good people to work in GRC because they understand all the stuff. Let me back up. For the help desk people, this actually help y'all out. When I have consultations with them and I'm telling them about the stuff they're doing, I say, hey, all these controls, and when you verify these people, or because you got to go to this sandbox to test this software out or take it from this drive to install it for people, these are all controls based on whatever framework. And I was like, this is a way how you can get out of help desk if you understand what you're doing is tied to a framework. And I was like, being in one of those technical roles, because hated to love it, there is a bit of technicality to a lot of help desk roles if you actually figuring stuff out. You know how the controls should perform the way if they're implemented correctly. Some people on the other side, they just, oh, NIST 853 say we need, you know, multi-factor authentication or whatever.
Yeah, what does that
but,
mean?
But they don't understand, like, okay, how are we going to do it? We're going to do, we're going to enable it to only just do, what's it? The pop-up notifications on the phone. We're going to do RSA tokens. Are we going to disable SMS because that's a way that somebody can get spoofed if they SIM swap them? And also, like, how are we going to make sure it's configured the right way?
Yeah.
So that's the thing that the people on the ground floor know because they deal with it. They deal with the social engineering attacks when somebody come in and is trying to fish for information. So they understand, like, maybe using first and last name, maybe social, is not a good way to identify these people. We need an SSO people don't know or a different type of alias that we could tie these people to.
Yeah, like an internal employee number or something like that, maybe. You know, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe we need to implement, hey, these people can't access nothing on a computer until they're actually on a corporate network, so they need to connect to VPN before they can do anything.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that goes into that stuff, so yeah. It's like, this is...
But I'm saying even the help desk people don't understand, like, hey, you are really doing the controls like GRC. You just... They called your old help desk and so they can pay you that way HR-wise.
Yeah, but can you blame the company or the person? Like, because me, I'm going to say this is why you always be upskilling. This is why I like certs. Because when you get a job like help desk and you go through a cert like Sec Plus, it starts to make sense because you're working the job and you start seeing things that tie your work back into what the cert is teaching you. And you're like, oh, this is... I do this every day. Like, didn't know this was what this was called. Like, I didn't know I was actually implementing some type of framework doing this basic password reset. Like, so that's what I say. Like, you people have to actually understand the job that they're doing, not just do it and go home, but understand it to the where they can now leverage that other knowledge they got to progress to the next level. So.
I'm glad you said that because the one thing about that trash Black IT network group is it's always the gift that keeps on giving with content. And one of my favorite posts, an anonymous post, we're going to read it and we're going to react to it because it's pretty much a cautionary tale of what people should not do when they get a job just because everybody in their family probably only made 17 and they making 30 or why you shouldn't be satisfied with $30 an hour.
Yeah.
So this post says, I'm a seasoned IT professional with a long career in application support and enterprise systems, and I'm currently seeking my next opportunity after being laid off in June. While I don't consider myself narrowly specialized, I bring broad hands-on experience supporting complex applications, troubleshooting issues, partnering with businesses and technical teams, and keeping operations running smoothly. I've had a few interviews, though none of them have progressed to a second round, and I'm starting to reflect on how my background may be perceived. With an extensive work history, I sometimes wonder if my experience unintentionally signals my age. They're 63. and whether their lack of formal certifications is holding them back. Much of my learning has been on the job, adapting quickly, solving problems, and mastering systems as needed. Certifications were often pursued only when required or provided by employers. I was earning close to six figures before my layoff, but at this stage, I'm open to roles with lower compensation if they offer stability and meaningful work. I still need to work for several more years and want to make the most of this time financially. Like many, life circumstances shaped my financial path. I was a single parent raising four children, and long-term investing wasn't always possible when immediate needs came first. Now I'm focused on building what I can for the years ahead. I'm interested in hearing from others, especially those later in their careers who are still working or have successfully pivoted. Are there industries, roles, or companies that value experience and reliability over titles and certifications? Any advice on where to focus my search or how to best position myself would be greatly appreciated. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
But number one, and this is go back to the hiring thing, there's definitely, it was a quote. I was listening to Marcellus Wiley, and he was reacting to, what's it, Ramona Shelbourne? And she was quoting something her therapist said. She said, when people give their opinion without being asked, it comes off as judgment. This guy is probably getting prejudged already because they may, and I didn't follow up with the post for us, like who commented on it. So I don't know if they got the year they came out of school on there or when they worked certain places. But if you got stuff, if you're 63, you probably got stuff from 1999 and 2000 stuff in there. They going to ageism you, number one. Number two, those people are like, why didn't you move up?
Yeah.
Like, what type of person am I getting after 30, 40 years in the workforce? You haven't been able to lead a team or do anything of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I was getting at. Like, 30-plus years of work experience signifies somewhere you had some leadership being brought in instead of just being doing support the whole 30
years. No, it should signify that.
Yeah.
You should have been managing something. Why weren't you getting certifications at 63? If you consider yourself to be a tech person, you should already know how this industry goes. Yeah. Like most of the people, if you think about wherever you worked, most people who have managed this have probably been boomers.
Yeah.
Most of the time. I've only had, I think, maybe one millennial manager.
Yep, my last one. Or
my favorite manager is a millennial. So outside of that, everybody's boomers. Everybody around my dad age. My guy, JPMC, pretty much old enough to be my dad.
Yeah.
His name was Leon. But no, that's a tale. So if you try to get complacent and think, okay, cool, I know this, I'm valuable, or you perceive yourself to be valuable when, like, you're more so just the number.
Yeah.
You were probably making too much money at that time and that they could pay somebody. If you was close to six figures, we're going to say hypothetically he's making between $75,000 to like $95,000. We're just going to say that. We can bring somebody in here that's 21, 22 and pay them $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they can probably pick it up way faster than you.
Yeah, probably got the close to that range because of the tenure. Each year they give you a little bonus or whatever. So.
Yeah, so is that, the good thing I guess to say, that person was getting interviews, but if you're not getting past the second round, your elevator pitch and what you can do is hindering you.
Yeah, it sounds limited. Yeah, basically that or, like I said, if you're going to have 30 plus years of IT experience, you got to be able to say how you impacted, not just did low-level troubleshooting stuff, right? So.
And 9 times out of 10, he probably was like a lead or somebody who knew everything. On your resume, you might as well say, hey, help desk manager, application support manager. The recruiters, if you get the job and they do a background check, they are not going to see if you did help that title at the company. I promise you. They're just going to see if you worked there through the work number or however they do it.
Yeah.
So you may not ever see this because you wrote your thing anonymous, but if you do see it, hopefully there's some good advice for you. And that's my problem with the anonymous people. I think I put in that group and say, hey, well, first of all, I take courage to be in tech. So you writing stuff anonymous mean you're not going to be successful. Because why are you so scared to put your name on something?
Yeah, I mean, some posts I understand when they say I'm looking for a new job and I got my manager in here, so I don't want them to know that I'm looking for a new job. But, you know, outside of that, just a post like that shouldn't have to be anonymous.
Let my manager know. They should value me enough to either give me a promotion or some more money.
I mean, not all managers that cool.
Well,
luckily, I had decent managers since I've been working tech. So
when I left JPMC, he was like, I'm not surprised. He knew. Because within like a month or two there, I was trying to get on threat modeling team. And HR policy wouldn't let me.
Yeah.
And who was that I was talking to? I was talking to somebody how a person was supposed to be going to this new role. Oh, that was you. Remember the dude was supposed to go to the new role, and they pretty much jived him on a new role, and the rec got closed?
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens internally, right? So if you got bad management, they try to stunt your growth and get you out of there. So
it's not even, that means bad management, but it's just company politics. If a company don't move you within like a 3 weeks to a month to the role you already got and offered, it's time to go somewhere else. Because they'll make you, they do the guy like that at the help desk I was at. It took them years to finally move Robert to that sock role. Years. They was like, I was like, he better than me. I would have came and said, I ain't answering the call until y'all do something. Like next week, I don't need to be doing nothing else but answering no phones.
Yeah. That sounds real familiar to some people I know right now. So
yeah, man, brother, you didn't left and you leveling up. We trying to get out the help desk. I'm telling you though, think about it. Okay, so the demographics of when you worked on the help desk, what the age range was?
I was all ages. It was the youngest person was like 19 up to 40.
So I'm pretty sure
we had classes every 2 weeks because the training sessions were 2 weeks, right? So every 2 weeks it was a new class of people coming in. And they hired like a total of 100 plus people in the help desk at that time. So yeah, it was all types of people coming in.
And I'm pretty sure the people that were close to their 40s, that was probably like the highest paid job they ever had.
Probably. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's not that long ago, but yeah, mid 20s is for a lot of people without degrees and stuff, it's a lot.
I'm not talking about them. They still starting their life. I'm talking about the people that's late 30s, 40s.
Yeah, I'm saying like people without degrees or who like in their later ages, you know, 40s and stuff, they probably been used to working
because that's the trick.
Jobs like 15, 12 to $17 an hour or so, you know.
Yeah, because that's the trick. It's the same thing while like when we have on that video, if you go back and look at the one with the 120K versus 250 and everybody giving their opinions on it. On TikTok, a guy said this. He said, look, first of all, to be honest, a lot of y'all shouldn't even be in a conversation because y'all had never made $120,000 a year.
Yeah.
So y'all don't even know what it feel like for that money to hit your account. And I was like, you got a point. Because somebody always telling you what they would do based on what their current situation is. Like when I got that I quit video, people think I really up and just quit JPMC. No, it was just a clickbaity way to get views on that video.
Yeah.
I didn't actually quit. I put my resignation in and I went to a new company. But you know, my reasons for leaving, they was like, well, I would just stay there for whatever amount of money. Then the same people that would be at that role for 5 years and then get laid off and now don't have no skills because they wasn't doing nothing.
Yeah.
And that's what the people don't really understand. They just are cool. They want to maintain, but the days of just maintaining is over.
Got to be up and on the up and up every, sure, I'm going to say every day. Every day.
Nobody going to pay you $175,000 for 5 years and you got nothing to show for. You ain't lead no projects. You didn't do nothing. And what are they getting out of it?
And they definitely not going to tell you what to do. When you're in that salary bracket, you're not getting told what to do. Like, hey, I need you to do this.
Oh, yeah, sure. You're going to meet your manager and they're going to either tell you that or you're going to figure out, okay. And they're not going to spoon for you, so you're going to have to make it happen. Okay, where are these people? This is what I need to meet with. They're not going to set the meetings up for you. I had to set up these different meetings and meet with these different people because I knew I was going to need to get information out of them whenever I needed it for whatever I was working on. So you can't be scared.
Yeah, a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people are ready for that type of, like, individuality, responsibility-wise. Like, a lot of people still are task-driven because a lot of jobs is what they have you do. Like, hey, you do this. You only do this.
But even if you go with that, like when I got the help desk, yeah, I was task driven, but I started realizing stuff that didn't make sense. So I wrote it down and said, hey, we should do this or that.
A lot of people don't do that.
I know. That's when I say, hey, when I'm doing resumes, I say, give me all the stuff you completed and did, like all wins. Some people don't have any. So now I'm having to finesse whatever they have on the bullet points, or we just generalize some stuff and I say, you need to study it and have your stories ready.
Yeah, we did a mock interview with someone. They said they had 5 years of, you know, IT analytical experience. But then they was going for like a system administrator role, so they were trying to graduate from the help desk. And we just asked them basic, you know, networking questions. How would you troubleshoot DHCP not working? Yeah, I used to put in a ticket to our networking team. I'm like, no, but you're the one that's going to be doing this stuff now, right? So have you you got AI, you got Google, like you can at least, you know, have this type of stuff. Well, I never had to do that on a job. That's why I'm saying people be stuck to what they just do on the job, not trying to be inquisitive about the next thing they're trying to get into.
Yeah.
And that stuff. So.
And why you said that, while we're here, perfect example, because I've been in some interview processes that are different. Like, told you about the OT joint. Most people don't got OT experience. Even the guy I talked to, the screening call, he was like, yeah, we're having a hard time finding people that just got strictly got OT experience. But what I did, I got my interview cheat sheet where I put my about the company, their values, and all this other stuff, news that's going on with the companies I could bring up in the interview. And then I started tabbing it out. Okay, all these frameworks, I don't understand. Hey, Gemini, explain, you know, this framework to me and its importance when it comes to OT security, like I'm, you know, five or however, whatever. And then they'll give me a bullet point of whatever. So now I got a high-level overview. Oh, because I can show you right now, me texting Gabe, I was like, hey, this stuff just like, Gabe, I said, this stuff is just like typical cyber stuff, but it just focuses a lot on availability and confidentiality. He was like, yeah, all this stuff is really pulled from, you know, NIST 853. I was like, it's literally the same stuff. But people won't even prepare to interview to just even do well. They think they're just going to go out there and wing it. And that's why you ever seen, you ever did a mock interview with somebody, or you ever took a test, or you studying for something, and you say, man, I just studied for, I know it. And then you know it, you look at the question after the test, and he's like, dang, yeah. I did know it. It's because you didn't prepare well. That's why you didn't know it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Because the one question, he's like, yo, have you ever passively located assets? But I was like, I had him ask it again. I said, no, but I'm familiar with that you have to do it passively, because if it's actively, you can risk shutting down like an actual node scanner or a tool in the OT environment because of how, I forgot what word I used. I had my interview voice on. But I was saying, you know, how volatile those environments are. So I was like, but I understand you got to do it passively. And I think you do it by like looking like at network flow data so you can see if something is actually still working the correct way versus like trying to do a ping. That's one of the first things, like, they'll tell you when you go in the environment, don't ping nothing. Mess around, take down something.
I'd be surprised they had ping enabled.
True. That is a way that you could mitigate it, but you just never know. Because during the interview, the dude was like, he was looking at my resume, and he was talking about he didn't like to do IR much because he had flashbacks of doing some IR when WannaCry happened in some factories.
Yeah.
And he was like, mark my words, man. WannaCry is still going on in some factories right now. I said, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, the technology don't get updated that often, so, you know.
Yeah.
Still got to deal with the same
old problems.
That's
the thing. Some of the biggest companies that are most notable is behind on their tech. They just lucky enough nobody has been successful to take them down.
Hey, your favorite industry, finance. Hey, banks, they love using mainframe. All that stuff from the early 1990s.
Yeah, they're I always say finance is, well, not the fintech companies, but the old finance banks, I always say they are similar to the government because they're highly regulated and they're slow to move. But for the most part, I think most of them are kind of like up to date now with the cloud, and they got different tools. They got their WAFs. They got their Palo Alto next-gen firewalls. So I would say most of the time, as long as they got a robust network infrastructure, they'll be all right. Keyword, robust.
Yeah. And it's actually tested to actually work, right? So, you know, having all the stuff doesn't mean much if it's not tested to actually work.
Right.
Oh, you know what? It's been official now, right? So the three big clouds then went down like in the same month. AWS, Google, they all done had some weird issues going on. Yeah, so if you people really found out quickly if their disaster recovery plan was working or not, because a lot of people's stuff wasn't working. So
yeah, and they weren't doing a lot of active tabletops to test it. That's why you see the shift for people to be hybrid, for on-prem and cloud. You think about it, the rage was the last couple of years, just put everything in the cloud.
Yeah, and people just started doing that. I know they did that the last place I was at. That's willy-nilly using cloud services and start, you know, getting these million-dollar bills and stuff, and then not.
Yeah, you ain't got
why.
No. That's what the whole subsector of FinOps come into play. Because you're saving money in the cloud. Like, hey, auto-scaling and all these different things, all these things need to be shut down. Billing alarms, yep. You think, I don't, like, it's affordable because it can scale at speed, but at the same time, if you don't have any type of things in place to let you know what you spilled and what your projection should be, you're going to run up a bill fast. You're like, we better off having our own service.
That or you're not having actual people who know how to use the technology there, you know, because, you know, what a lot of companies like to do, especially when you're talking to a C-suite who have no idea how this technology works, they just know they need it for their business model. Why can't the guys we already have who only touch help desk work manage our cloud infrastructure? And they probably never been inside of a cloud environment. They just, hey, give it to them. We don't need to hire nobody. Let them figure it out.
Yeah.
And then they get these $1 million bills and yeah, man. What happens? Yeah, you wanted to take the cheap way out. You can't always be cheap for the best return.
I literally just talked about that the other day, too. It's like, you get what you pay for. We was talking about how a lot of these, some of these consulting companies charge these super cheap rates, but then the work is trash.
Yeah, you got a person trying to do the job of 10 people.
They don't even, bro, what job? They just get the contract, and they try to make up some SOPs and hope the people can follow it.
Yeah, BS.
It don't be no real thought behind it. And that's why they end up losing customers. And that's when you realize, hey, good help is a premium. I can either pay for this premium help, or when it's a breach or something go down, something ain't working right, I got to pay more money to get stuff back up and then build back my trust with my customers.
Yeah.
That's literally what you got to think about. But moving along from that segment, you went from being an ISO, and now you finally start being fun, man. Listen, when he became an engineer, y'all, every day, hey, man, let me show you what I worked on today. So, yeah. See, I made this grip, and I had to do this and that. Ain't nobody even helped me with it either. And I made it. And they didn't want to give him no promotion or nothing. They was kind of being stingy with the money.
Yeah.
So talk about, man, your time working in Funky Town and being a security engineer.
Progression, kind of just happened because I was just showing the interest towards it and nobody else really cared for it because that means – more thinking. A lot of people don't like to do more thinking. They just want to show up and go home, right? Less stress. Somebody got to do it. So, yeah, I took it up. And what I quickly realized is, for anybody else who may see the same problem, when you deep in the woods of things, you quickly find out who belongs and who doesn't, or who actually cares and who doesn't care, right? Because I have real specific things that actually requires you to actually know what you're talking about. If I did have a question, that's why I had to figure out a lot of things on my own, which is why I be trying to tell people, you know. I couldn't go ask my manager, hey, this tool, this configuration, this line 68 has this weird Python code. They're going to look at me crazy.
Because they don't know.
They don't know. And anybody else, like you go accessing a cybersecurity professional, like, hey, have you seen this configuration file, this line? And I'm like, nah, I just press scan and it works. I just never had to do all that. I'm like, oh, well, do you know anything about outside of just pressing the button, scan, and work? Nah. Oh, okay. No help at all. So, yeah, that's how I was. There's a lot of, you know, puzzle pieces you had to put together and just actually have the mentality to figure out how things work and why it works and when it stopped working, what caused it to stop working, what to make it start back working again. So a lot of time spent on Google. Luckily, you know, AI things came around to make those searches go a little faster. But then again, you know, people will tell you, all I need is AI. And, you know, a lot of times it comes back with a lot of BS that's made up that doesn't make sense. Copy and paste a script. You take down your whole network because, you know, you don't know what it's doing. You just say, hey, I need a script that removes this permission from this group. And the script that gives you removes the whole group entirely. So, you know.
Yeah, because they're trying to substitute, actually learn how to do something with just AI.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work because you don't even know how to prompt it in a niche way to get what you want without doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And just so, yeah, security engineering, at least in my experience, I think is massively different for various different companies, that definition of security engineering. It's actually taking systems and tools and making them actually work and integrate in a proper manner. And a lot of, like, different places I've been at, as far as, like, the engineering aspect of it is the underutilization of the things they already have and they're trying to go acquire something else or they're not using the thing properly, right? you know, y'all like to talk about Splunk on here a lot. So an example is Splunk, where you're trying to say, hey, they just ingest everything. That's not
That's going to be a extremely expensive bill.
It's expensive, and depending on the architecture setup, slow, inefficient, resource intensive, doesn't make a lot of sense. Spending more time troubleshooting it than actually looking at, you know, incidents or whatever it is. So, yeah, had to deal with that a lot. And that goes back to the original basics of foundations, at least from my aspect of, because I know you like to say, hey, skip A+. I tell people don't. You ain't got to get the cert, but at least learn hardware, CPUs, and RAM, and these things, and why it matters. Because when you go to engineering aspects of it, you are allocating these resources that cost money, and you just go and throw 128 gigs on a server that only needs 8. Why?
Well, you can learn that through Kev Tech course or Course Careers.
You can learn it, but don't skip it. That's what I'm saying. Don't skip the foundation just because it seems rudimentary.
I guess that's, like, I don't know. I guess it's, to me, I guess knowing, kind of reading the manual of what the server can take and what it actually needs to perform is common sense to me.
It may be to you. I'm talking about people who want to, you know, they knew they don't overkill. Know. They don't want to, they trying to get off help desk. They're trying to do engineering work. They, you know, skipped A+. They just been going with the flow. You need to learn.
So who did that stuff?
That one, come one of the places I was at, it just was under-resourced. You know, it was the same setup for years. It worked. But as new machines and new, it wasn't built for a scalable architecture. And I'm like, well, this thing runs completely trash. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And we had external consultants come in and say the same thing that I was already was saying. But, you know.
They ain't trust you because you ain't had Splunk on your last name.
I ain't no Splunk in my resume, so. You know, they just repeating the same stuff I don't already.
Oh yeah, then you said they paid that man. How much said they paid that dude to come talk to y'all? To tell him the same thing you just said.
Well, yeah, I know they have an external consultant. It was thousands for a 3-day trip. I know it was insane. I don't know, 10+ thousands of dollars just for them to come for a 3-day fly out trip and to not even fix nothing, just to have recommendations.
You could have did that for 10,000.
Yeah, like, you know, stuff like that. You know, that's the engineering aspect of it is not always the best, prettiest looking, you know, piece of work though.
That, and when you think about now, we go back into disaster recovery, GRC, engineering, because how these are intertwined. Hey, what logs do we need? And then where do the other ones go? How long do we store our logs? How do we get our logs when we need them for certain emergencies? I don't think they're important because you can't just keep the logs there forever.
Yeah.
They need to go somewhere. Like, I think some people, they only keep like, they'll last maybe for like 90 days. And then the rest they put like in, what they call, like Glacier or Blob storage or something like that. So you got to get them de-thawed and request them from, you know, the storage team or something. That way you can look through them. But some people don't do that. So this the Splunk search here just messed up, going slow, spinning. You deleting jobs off of a simple search.
Yeah. Yeah, that's comes from, like I said, doing the cheat way out. No. Giving it to people. So they had that figured out.
It come from a lack of.
You go to training.
There you go.
Here you go. Yeah, training. That too. Should I train myself? I got on YouTube.
No, I'm just like, man, people probably like, why you keep on saying training?
Yeah, man.
The guy he was talking about, every time Lee would ask him, so if they ask you this in an interview, what you going to say?
Training. All right, you don't know the answer to this. Like, they ask you a real specific, how do you do X, Y, and Z? Well, you have to have training first and foremost. I'm like, good luck.
Right.
I mean, I guess it worked for him in his career. He 20 plus years in high level PM. So, man, I guess it works for him. So,
got on a good contract. See, I need you on this contract over here, Lee.
Yeah, man. But yeah, that's the you know, the biggest thing I see as far as like people making a transition is, you know, just a foundational gap of knowledge. Like I can say, you know, the foundations, a lot of other things is easier to pick up on. Right. Like, I hate networking, but I learned this basic networking stuff. So when things doesn't make sense, I can easily just look up an answer, and then that makes sense to me. Right. If you don't know what a subnet is and you're going to look up how do I configure a subnet, then you're going to be even more lost than the original question of what is a subnet. Yeah. Yeah.
You should put in the subnet calculator.
I was good to a point to where I can just do it in my head. Yeah, I ain't had to do it in a while, so yeah. But
so now you leave Funky Town, man. Were you sad to leave Funky Town?
Dallas?
No. Fort Worth is Funky Town.
Fort Worth?
Yeah, that's a nickname.
I don't know nothing about that.
Tell her, look it up.
I don't know nothing about that. Funky Town. Hmm. That sounds like some Houston. That sounds like Houston stuff.
No, it's called Funky Town.
Sure. Yeah. Now, yeah, you talking about moving to Colorado?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's different. I'll say that. But as far as the same, I guess we are the same right now because we're recording this 2 days or so before Christmas, and it's 80 degrees here. It's probably like 70 out there. So
it's probably better weather, though, because it ain't as humid, right?
Yeah, it's not as humid for sure, but it's still odd for this time last year, it was like -5 out there, and now it's like 70.
It could have been a white Christmas for y'all this year.
Hey, that snow is crazy, so it's like great right now. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because when you moved out there, you were stuck up in the hotel for a couple of days.
Yeah, I was stuck in the hotel for like a week. It was snowing like crazy, and, you know, out here, snow shuts down everything, and snow don't stop nothing up there. The show continues.
Yeah, because the infrastructure not be fair. People don't got snow tires. They don't have, like, the heated roads.
There ain't no heated roads, as far as I know. I ain't got no snow tires. They just got plows that actually come out multiple times throughout the hour to pick up snow.
Yeah, but see, they don't invest in that here because it don't snow that much. So it's just like, hey, man, y'all just stay home because we not finna put millions in the stuff that barely happened down here.
I guess. I mean, still, life got to continue.
I agree, but not down
you
here.
You see what happened in 2021? What, like hundreds of people died on that highway?
Oh, yeah, that black ice. I was still in Bossier at the time, so I was straight. Even though everything is frozen there, too. It's a tundra everywhere in the South.
Yeah.
So tell us about the job that you first took when you got to Colorado.
So that was, like I said, more still doing the security engineering work, but learning more about, you know, Linux automation and compliance and control configuration, automating those tasks, learning more about like DevSecOps process and containerization, OpenShift, you know, those things. Like you said, we had an AI solution. First place I've been in, I had an AI solution in place for security monitoring. It was pretty cool if you have context behind the alerts that triggered, but still, this is why I say, you know, AI can only do so much for you. But yeah, it had that piece of it inside of it. So it was pretty interesting things I was touching for the most part, and just getting spun up on how to really get into the automation of workflows.
Yeah, so name like the new platforms you had access to real quick.
Yeah, so that was first the hypervisor side, Nutanix and Vectra. It's an up-and-coming name in the security space. Ansible tool for, like, Linux automation. So it's not, like, an interface or nothing for that. It's just all command line stuff. OpenShift, basically Red Hat's version of Kubernetes stuff. What else? It was a lot of different things in the standard, you know, Nessus and your favorite Trellix, you know, because you... That's your people. That's your favorite. That's your favorite tool.
That's them, so. Right down there, man. That was McAfee.
Yeah.
I think that was cool. I know you said you really work with Linux a lot. So now, would you consider yourself like a Linux master?
Nowhere near Linux mastery, but enough to do what I need to do for security wise, as far as automating tasks, making secure Linux configurations. You know. Things like that, but there's mastery of Linux is people who make their own drivers and own their own flavors of Linux. Those are the masters. I'd lead that to them, you know.
Okay. Now, would you say that after doing that job with like working with Linux probably like 90% of the time, can you see why Linux admins get paid good now?
I mean, that should have been a known thing because there's so many people who try to avoid learning Linux for some reason. I don't know why, but it's what the world infrastructure is really built upon is a lot of Linux servers out there that's running the show for a lot of organizations. So, they get paid a lot because people try to avoid learning it and get into the weeds of the command line and knowing services and why certain things fail and how to correctly configure them to be secure because, you know, the concept is Linux is more secure than Windows. Well, not entirely the case if you're not configuring things right. So you got to have people who actually know how to do that without actually taking it down. So, yeah, it's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah. Flip that screen for me so I can make sure it's still recording.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm paranoid. You know, I'm paranoid. But now, guys, Mr. Lee, a.k.a. Dr. Lee, a.k.a. Detective Lee from Rush Hour. But when I first met Lee, he wanted to be a hacker. He wanted to be Mr. Robot. He wanted to wear the hoodies and not have any sun come through the windows and get it in. Now, that was a tall task for him to do back then, because I even told him, I was like, man, I'm just be honest with you. It probably ain't gonna happen right now, just based on where you at. And because it's, shoot, you even said, like, now you see from, like, from back then to where you're at now, where the differences in your skills was now, like, why that's, like, a tall tale. Because I know one of the things I know from people who are prior military or have worked in GovTech, they don't understand the lack of training that's in the public sector.
Yeah.
They don't understand. I was like, hey, a lot of times people don't have budgets to just bring people up in the company. It's rare. If you find a company that lets you go from doing whatever to being a red teamer, like, you found a good one. Other than that, you may not find it a lot of times.
Yeah.
So when he told me, hey, I don't know what it was. I can't remember if you text me or whatever, but you was like, hey, I got this interview for this red team joint, and I got to do this CTF. And then he was geeked. He was like, man, I just got like, how many did you get? How many flags did you get?
Yeah, it was like seven.
How many flags altogether is it?
He's like 20, but that's like a long shot. Like I said, they tell me over 65, 70% of people can't even get one. Yeah. So I was like, I didn't think I was doing that well, but I found out I was top 10% of people. I'm like, great.
That's what's up. So after you did good on the CTF, that's when they did that final interview, right?
Yeah. The interview was just a conversation. Like, hey, what, you know, why
here?
Why here? Why, you know, would you? It was just.
What did you say?
It was just a conversation. Like, why here? Do you think you ever get, you know, bored with this type of work? I'm like, man, that's a long way away for me to get bored with this type of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that came from the company did a presentation at a B-Sides in Colorado. So, I went there on a Saturday morning and wouldn't have nothing else to do. So talked to some of those guys there. Said it sounded like they do some cool things. And oddly enough, my coworker at the previous place is the one that convinced me to apply to the place. Because I wasn't. I was just because it looked like they needed hardware knowledge on top of software knowledge for like pen testing stuff. But applied anyway, did the CTF. They say, yeah, this is just to gauge where you're at skill-wise. If you can actually do well on the CTF, we can actually show you, like, the hardware testing side of things. So yeah.
Yeah, man. So now, granted, you've been there, like, a couple of weeks. Let's talk about, like, just a regular, like, day for you now.
Well, right now we're still just, since it's the end of the year, you know, it's, things are like slow, but did a initial internal assessment, waiting on a client assessment I got coming up. Maybe that'll start in the first beginning of the new year or whatever. But yeah, a lot of it right now is, you know, just your favorite thing is actually training on like hardware pen testing. So I took it upon myself to go enroll in TCM's IoT hacking course. Now, I would say that is a very good course as far as actually learning what goes inside of hardware testing. They have you order a lot of different tools, so they had to order a TP-Link old router, and you basically tear it apart, get inside of it, dump firmware. And
I'm talking about in it.
Yeah, you get it. Yeah, all that. That course runs you through all of those things. So it's like a, if you're not exposed to that world, you're not even going to think about it, right? Like, people don't even know. At least I didn't know that hardware hacking was actually a thing that's actually being taken seriously. And now in the GovTech space too, because with the war between Ukraine and Russia, a lot of companies are trying to hurry up and push forward like they're doing with this AI drones. So we specialize in drone tech testing. So, yeah.
That's fire, man. You're going to be like Watchdogs. And I think you do a little bit of that on Splinter Cell and any of other games where you can hack stuff. So that's pretty cool. Now, let's have some fun a little bit. What skills did you work on, like, every day to do this? Like, Lee would be doing stuff, and this is why earlier I was, you know, hang on, let me play this for Lee. Let me show y'all, this the mood Lee was in earlier. But, no, I was comparing him to Dayspring and Tay because, like, years ago, every time I would talk to Day, like, this is when I used to be a real night owl. It might have been, like, 1 or 2 in the morning. Yeah, bro, I'm just doing this lab, or I'm working on this. If anybody who's watched Day Cyberwalk stuff, he talked just like that. And I'm talking to Lee. Oh, I'm working on this CTF. I'm doing this. Oh, I'm doing this SANS course. I'm doing this or that. So I'm trying to show y'all, too, that it's not easy. Like, a lot of people want to do exactly what you do, but they is not willing to do that.
Yeah, that's why the headline is maybe what you're going to say, you won't be a hacker or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it takes a lot of time to understand how things work and why it works and why it doesn't work. And it's not as glorified as it seems like in movies and stuff, because there's a lot of times you just won't find anything unless you just actually step back and take a break and wake up and suddenly it hits you. But I think you only get that suddenly it hits you moment if you actually know why you're looking for the things you're doing, right? Or you actually understand why certain actions happen within protocols or applications. So, but if you don't know that stuff, then it won't ever hit you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think you just went through the gauntlet of learning a lot. I mean, even some of the things you may feel like are more middle school that you learned when you was at LM, I think they still come into play some type of way of all the policies and stuff that you worked on and what you know to probably try to address or whatever security news. Or I know you listen to like a couple of things like on YouTube, that Purple Team channel you showed me, some good stuff.
Yeah, the guy I work with now, he liked it too. I told him, need to check out the Weekly Purple Team, man. Yeah, he been on it.
They Manny got a channel too on Google, on YouTube.
Yeah. I think it's a guy that worked for them now. I was watching one of those, I don't know if it was Darknet Diaries or some type of cyber news YouTube. Or a guy working at Mandy and was the one who found some ransomware key to end it on. It's one that wanna crack, because I know that guy. It was another one, another big one I just forgot. But yeah.
Now, let's talk about some of these hot takes Lee got over here. He says one of them, traditional pen testing idea is Kali Linux, get to a web app and tools and do all the work. That's false. What do you mean by that?
I don't know. There's a meme going around, and it's been around for years now that, you know, it'll be in one of these Facebook groups or something. Somebody says, okay, I got my Kali Linux box up. Now, what else do I do? Don't know what to tell you, bro. Like, what do you think it was? What do you think it was? Like, what?
That remind me of the people that get the Sec Plus. All right, I'm ready for six figures.
Yeah, like, what do you think it is? Like,
so, okay, let's change this into being so much of ragging on people to, if somebody does install Kali Linux, what should they do? At least the most foundational thing.
I mean, understand Linux, first of all, basic. Don't be scared of command line. Maybe change the default Kali Linux password if you want to have it connected to the internet. You know, simple things, but.
Like, what's like a simple project that they could do? The easiest thing that's a beginner.
Try hack me.
No. Away from try hack me, I'm talking about with Kali Linux.
There's no projects on it.
Not like a project on it, bro. Like something you would do. Like you, if
I mean, you can pen test your internal network. How about that? There you go.
Oh, so at your house?
Yeah, at your house. Yeah, you know.
So you can see in clear text.
Do your first nmap scan and see if you can identify all the IPs that it comes back with as connected to your network. That may require some configuration because I think by default. They make like your VMs not be able to reach your internal network or something like that. Or so you got to figure out that routing process. knowing the difference between bridge and NAT, you know, basic networking concepts.
See, at least you're helping them right now. That might be a start. You know what I'm saying? Now, building skills takes foundational knowledge and being inquisitive.
Yeah, like we just talked about. Foundations, A-plus knowledge, right? RAM, hardware, CPU, architecture, ports, services, knowing why. Because I built my own, like, little network CTF PCAP thing, right, where the scenario is, hey, an alert went out for a plain text password being sent in the network. You know, find it, where it came from, who it went to. So if you got basic A-plus knowledge, the task gave you all the details that you needed to know. Mm-hmm. Plain text sent through the network, so... In A-plus, they talk about ports and services. So what service?
You want some plain text.
Yeah. What services are you using plain text? You know, what ports use plain text, network connectivity, FTP, HTTP, one of those. So that already narrows down what you're looking for, right? You're looking for things that doesn't support encryption, right? So it's like, hey, that's why I'm saying you can't skip that stuff, because then if you don't know that, you'll be like a needle in a haystack, right? Mm-hmm. Something that can take you 2 minutes to figure out, you'll be just looking for an hour because you're looking through every single log in a PCAP, and you know those can get to thousands of lines real quick. You save yourself a lot of time just by knowing foundational things from lower search like A-plus or NET-plus.
Okay, what about this one? AI automated test is still just a vulnerability scan, and differentiate between what's a vulnerability scan and what's a pen test.
Yeah, so, got a lot of AI hype out there, right? So traditional vulnerability scanning, if anybody's familiar, is, you got some network scanner tool that scans your network for known vulnerabilities based on, vendor reported version numbers or et cetera, right? You're not really doing a pen test by saying, hey, your version of, Apache is out of date and is vulnerable to some type of exploit. That's not really a pen test. The pen test confirms that it's true, because depending on what type of environment you're in, it may not be true. It may just be a false positive. This is why pen test comes in, to give you that context and business impact value behind what's being seen in your vulnerability report. So like we said before, or like I said at least, AI is not an intelligent human being who can differentiate output versus logic, right? So the logical thing is, put context behind the vulnerability that was found. If your environment doesn't have this certain version of Apache that doesn't use this vulnerable service, but based on the reported versioning number, it still says it's vulnerable anyway, well, that doesn't really do you much good, because it's not true. In the pen test, we actually test for these things to actually be impactful to your services and businesses or not. So, we got these companies that's pitching, hey, fully AI pen test.
AI compliance.
Yeah, fully AI pen test. You don't need pen testers no more. People pitching that in, these different groups, like, no, AI is going to replace all. Well, yeah, if you have people who lack knowledge of what things are really doing and what it's supposed to do, then yeah, you may get replaced, because you get replaced by people who don't know what they do in the first place. Which is why I really say that these people who make these decisions of layoffs need to be the ones getting replaced with AI, not the other way around. So, but
we'll see. All right, so we talked about this earlier, and it's another great bit of content from y'all very own Black IT Network group.
Yeah.
And you commented on this last, but this person said, so tired of applying for 2 years with nothing. Sometimes it ain't what you know, it's who you know. Yeah. I'm looking for an IT recruiter to work with regarding a cyber analyst role or an early cloud role. I am a recently separated veteran who lives around the Houston area. I did almost 7 years as an IT specialist in the Army. I also have a secret clearance and a Sec Plus certification. If any is here, please feel free to message me or vice versa. So I like to just deduce things from there because they mentioned two things relatively that don't necessarily matter per se to being a cyber analyst or possibly working in the cloud because you said an IT specialist. And most of the time, from my experience, the IT specialist was like the technician type of person from when we worked in the TSA where they'd go fix random things like hardware. It could be some software stuff because they had to install stuff. So they didn't list that, hey, this is why I'd be a good fit for these things. Like, I know how to do this, this, and this, this, and this. So I think therein lies the problem of, one, marketing themselves. I know over for 2 years that you have a bad resume because I just helped some people get some jobs in Houston, or we getting hits in Houston. So it's the bad resume, and you're relying, the fact that the NSA have my clearance and Sec Plus, let me know you're relying on those two things, thinking they're going to help you out trump the people that's in the regular world.
Yeah.
Because that's what you taught.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, going back to square one again, 2025, I don't know who or what, I'm pretty sure it's influencers, but also people who recently separating, I don't know if there is their command unit or whatever it is, telling them that they'll be just fine because they have Sec Plus and the clearance. Like, that is not enough. Because, what I found out is anybody in the military, anyone, military-wise, has a clearance. So what that mean? If everybody in the military who's in and out, you know, people getting out, these people see they need jobs too. And when they see these same ads that you see, hey, six figures in tech, all you need is this clearance and Sec Plus, you don't think you're going against all this competition? That's another fallacy I think we don't talk about enough is, I don't know about, you know, the lower ends of IT, but these six-figure jobs do not have multiple openings like that. It's always one person filling these spots. It's not hundreds of people who are going to get in like it's a factory or something.
Yeah, that's rare if you run into, like, there are situations I know of where people are hiring fast. I got a client.
But is they hiring mass fast? Hundreds of people?
Not hundreds. It'd probably be like in the singles to tens.
Yeah, 10 people. Still, when you got, what, they say average of 2,000 applicants per application now?
That's better than one.
But
you're right, though. But I went through the post, and some people gave them some good advice. Somebody said that they had a decent LinkedIn. Their name is on that post. I want to see if I can find them on LinkedIn.
Yeah, man, it just...
Somebody asked you, did you hear anything about South Carolina? Jameek Obihoha, whatever that is.
Yeah, people just got to understand that Sec Plus and clearance is just not the end-all, be-all. That's just the initial qualifiers. What's going to separate you from the rest of the people is what you can show you can do, what's on your resume, who you connect with. You know, you got to get out the house, show, you know. There's a lot of good resources for veterans nowadays. Like, I know there's one place, one site, Recruit Military. They always advertise in different cities where they having clear job fairs. I'd advise people to go to that. Actually get up, get out the house, you know, old school, shake some hands. Like, hey, I'm doing this. I know how to do this. I know that one other company, what's their name? They just had a virtual career fair. Paraton, they real big.
Man, Paraton will post a role and in 10 minutes is off. It's like no longer accepting applicants.
They hire real, like, quick, but they usually want you to relocate. So I also say that the veterans, too, like, there are known cities that are more, you know, known for clear jobs. You know, of course, D.C., Colorado's a good one now. Some places in like Tampa, Florida area. But I don't know a whole lot of clear jobs in like outside of like San Antonio and Austin, Houston and Dallas. I mean, you may have some contractors here and there, but as we see the job market, a lot of people not leaving these jobs. So You're going to have a lot of competition, and it's probably going to be harder to get into those places. So you may want to be open to relocating if the company pay for it, you know?
Yeah, I think people are pigeonholing themselves into that just because of you want to use your clearance. But you can get a private sector job at a company that may require you to need a clearance for an actual government contract. And a lot of people don't look into that aspect. They look going straight to clearance jobs, like you said, or anything else. But I think the biggest thing is a lot of people don't have a plan for when they get out of the military. And I know I'm not a person that served in the military, but it's kind of what I've noticed. Like, they didn't figure out. I think they say normally you need to be working on your plan for about a year before you're about to get out. Yeah. Like, all the stuff you need to do. Seemed like a lot of people didn't really do that enough, and that's why when they get out, they kind of shocked that what held weight there is not necessarily holding weight out here.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a good example. It's like when you're on a college campus, they care, you know, about your Greek letters.
Yeah.
When you get out here amongst the commoners and civilians, they don't care,
they don't
about
care
your
about letter. Your alpha, kappa, or whatever. And, you know, people be that's their identity a lot of times, right? You know. Especially those fraternities and stuff.
It's a serious matter.
Like, that's that's their identities, bro. Like, you get an interview. Yeah, I was an alpha. I ran, you know, the organization. Okay, that's good. Okay, tell me what you know about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean.
Do you watch 4th and 1 with Cam Newton and Peggy?
I've seen some of them, but okay, not dang. A lot of them.
Man, I like them because, like, they'll Cam will start something off and then Peggy starts singing with them. So when you was talking about the military people and all this other stuff, and I start thinking about the Janet Jackson, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
And then they'll start singing it. I was like, if I do it, Lee ain't going to sing along.
Yeah. I, first of all, I can't sing and I don't know a lot.
I heard you sound like Trey Songz.
No, of course. You see what is, what's going on with you today, man? You see this guy right here? Yeah. Yeah, man.
You sing to your lady?
No.
You never sang a song to her at all.
This good. I'm not Drake, man. That's you. You the Drake guy right here. You know,
you closer
to Drake than I am. So yeah,
it's Eric Bellinger. It's The Dream. It's Jacob Lattimore, Drew Hill. It's like a lot of different people. It's not just him. But you also had on here Pen Test versus Red Teaming. Explaining the difference between the two. What is the difference between a pen tester and a red teamer?
Yeah, because, you know, when we generalize the topic, it's usually, hey, is either blue or red team, right? But essentially, a pen tester does not always equal a red teamer. I mean, you can be dabbling in both, like I am doing now, but, like, red teamers are your adversarial APT qualified people. Like, they are basically legalized Chinese Russian threat actors who are targeting your organization to test your processes, your detections unknowingly to your blue team. And then depending on how far they get, that's when they start identifying the gaps in your processes and how you respond to incidents or whatever. So a pen test is a known, very small engagement, 2 weeks to like 4, where you are just going through trying to exploit as many vulnerabilities, find as many configurations as possible. Red teaming, we don't care about, oh, that server is vulnerable to cross-site scripting. Like, what benefit does it add to our operation? That does not get us further to our goals, so we're not going to exploit it just because it's there, you know?
Got it.
Yeah.
I want to do, like, I wish I could, like, physically, like, pen test, like,
companies. We got people that do all of that.
For real, like, they dress up in disguises and stuff?
We got people that do all of that. So I'm not into that.
I am.
Lock picking is, we call them covert entry specialists.
Yeah, bro, think about you posing as, like, an AT&T employee saying, hey, I'm here to change, to fix the internet. And the people just let you in a networking closet.
Yeah, there's teams that do that. The full spectrum. We got people that specialize in lock picking and physical assessments. And then once we get physical access, we got the specialized networking people who know the networking side, the software, the hardware. It's a whole team.
Because I always think about that type of stuff when I'm at doctor's offices. I was like, bro, it would probably be so easy to hack this joint.
Yeah, because once you get physical access, another big thing in like red teaming pen testing is reverse engineering stuff. So I know this is one guy I follow on YouTube. He says, if you can know how to reverse engineer anything is open source. And yeah, and that's pretty much the case. If you can get your hands on some proprietary software that nobody knows how it works, but you know how to reverse engineer things and you got patience, yeah, you can uncover everything about that application and reverse engineer it to get what you want out of it. It's basically how people is able to bypass, you know, your favorite EDRs and things, because they reverse engineer it. They see exactly how it works, and then they start writing bypasses for them. So, yeah.
Bet. And then here's some other stuff that you have. You put on here, you put all the tech conferences are only talking about AI.
Yeah.
Like there isn't many other things going on in tech. And I would like to challenge you on that and ask you to put a name on what the conferences are that are only talking about AI.
A lot of ones I went to recently, it was one in Colorado Springs. I forgot the name of it. It was one through ISSA.
I think I remember you mentioning that to me.
ISSA is a yearly thing that they do. But, yeah, a lot of conferences I hear, and I ask people on Facebook, too, is like, yeah, everyone you go to is always either the doom and gloom of AI or how it's so great it's going to change lives. It's like, hey, we still got more problems or things to talk about innovative-wise or problem-wise that's happening within tech. So it's like, yeah, like, can we get past the AI stuff? Because what we're seeing is a lot of flaws in AI. We ain't talking about that a lot, I don't think, as far as, you know, we got people who now, it was somebody, a security researcher, he posted, like, he had just won, like, a $30,000 bounty for discovering a Gemini exploit. So it's like,
I seen that yeah. Same recruiter that be posting all that good stuff, he posted something about, like, hackers making like $80,000 from HackerOne, from hacking stuff and everything like that. They had a cool little meetup we went up to here. Well, not a meetup. It was like a, I forgot what it was, but it was pretty cool. That's how I got this swag.
Yeah, it's like, bro, like, there's so much to talk about.
Like what?
A lot of, like we just said, physical pen tests, how, like, processes, like, when all these cloud services went down over the past, like, there was early November.
Do you think that was all intentional?
Of course it wasn't intentional for those organizations because, you know, that's loss of money.
But do you think it may have been a bad internal threat actor?
I mean, they all expose their different reasons. It's always some side to some odd service that's not working properly. But still, the whole point of that is to talk about people who are passing all these audits,
mm-hmm.
saying, hey, we got a disaster recovery plan. And as we've seen, when those services went down, apparently they don't, because a lot of organizations were down and had no other way to operate until they came back up. So why are we not talking about what's the penalty for lying during an audit? Like, we can talk about that type of stuff. Like, or what's a better way to actually test your disaster recovery plan?
Reminds me of, like, AJ was like, just because you get a green check mark don't mean it actually works.
Yeah, like, you know, we could talk about all these different things that's not AI related and it still is very impactful today. You know, coming, like, why are we still having new organizations still using Active Directory? Like, you're like, if you're not been around for 20 plus years, you're in a new startup phase.
Right, in the last couple of years.
Not intro. Like, I seen an article about, you know, the simplest thing, it's like a Google Workspace, and that makes so much sense, because in that startup company I was at, we didn't have Active Directory. We had a Google Workspace. I'm like, yeah. It's real easy for a small new company instead of introducing so much legacy things into your new environment. Why? Yeah. Why are you doing that? Just because you see these other big organizations do it, they do it because they've been around for a while.
Yeah, and it's pretty simple, because I got, in my small company, Google Workspace.
Yeah, it's like, why are we still introducing older technology and exposing yourself to the same already known risk that it carries already, right? So,
okay, this is one that's going to get you turned up. Hiring practices are still mostly jacked up in today's time.
Yeah, yeah, we all know this. Like, I'm pretty sure people who watch this, they know, because they probably been applying for stuff. But yeah, what are we looking for? 40 to 60K need 5 years of experience, CISSP, stuff like, why is that on the job description?
I don't know when I've seen it.
Why are we going through 7 rounds of interviews? There's no justification for me ever going through round interviews. I don't care if you big tech, whatever you are, you're not worth me spending my time going through 7 rounds of interviews.
Who went through 7 rounds?
Plenty of people I've known.
I know Kenneth did too many, and I was like, yeah, that's too many for him.
Plenty of people I know. You're not going to waste my time and play with my time, because people I worked with who've been hiring managers, who are actually good hiring managers, they say, hey, if you ask the right questions, one, interview is all you really need. Two is just stretching it. I mean, two is like, we ain't get what we needed from the first one. So, you know, we're going to just ask just to make sure type of deal. But anything outside of that is unnecessary. Like, we don't have to have a separate interview per team player. You don't have to mute the PM. We don't have to mute the team lead. You don't have to have a separate panel. That's why we call it panels. Have them all there. Have everybody ask their questions. Yeah, so those, of course, we talk about the ageism thing, like all these inferred biases. We're not going to even get into, like, the DEI thing, because a lot of people like to talk about that, like it actually helped us with it.
It never helped us.
It never helped us. I mean, some people would say, hey, well, now you're adding metrics, diversity metrics to their organization, giving them some type of, I don't know, bonus or whatever, but it really never helped us. You still had to be skilled. So taking it away really didn't do nothing but probably made it a little harder for people of color, because now, you know, DEI came with a lot of, you know, laws and things that prevented, like, these blatant racism type of deals.
But the thing is, it never really prevented nothing, because you had to prove it was racist.
Yeah, you had to prove it, and that was probably a challenge. But still, companies had to really be cautious about how they moved with things. Now, you know, they could just say, yeah, I don't want to talk to you no more. But at the end of the day, I think to get past all of these things is getting out the house, meeting people, talking to people. You're introverted, well, so what? A lot of people are. That's in tech, but you still make connections, meaningful ones, upskill yourself. You got to put down the game. You got to put down the club every Saturday for 8 hours. You're going to the club from 8 to 3 a.m. Like, you know, you can use that time to be upskilling yourself, because now at that point you make the gap smaller of you finding a job. It comes from so wide to now it's getting smaller and smaller, and it cuts down on that 2-3 years or however long people say they look for jobs, because now once you get the skills that's up to date, you got connections, you've been doing it for a while.
A lot of people don't got connections.
Yeah, but you don't get connected because you're not getting out the house.
Not even that. They not even posting on LinkedIn.
You can just post what you've been learning on LinkedIn, connect with some people who do the stuff you do, ask them what they do, just get an insight into the type of work that they do. You can use that for your experience.
Pick somebody's brain.
Stop
it. Don't say pick their brain. Like, I hate that.
Like, but I'm saying is, people are so transactional. They think that every connection must lead to a job.
But that's not the case, though. You just showed us that when we got in here. The dude just connected with you. He was like, hey, can you refer me?
Yeah, it's like everything ain't going to automatically just lead to a job. It's just maybe talking to them, getting their experience in their job may help you for the job that you're interviewing for, because now you can ask them real specific things if they want to really talk to you. Like, hey, if this type of thing happened to you on the day-to-day, how would you handle it? And you talk to somebody who's actually in the field doing it, and you're trying to do that, you can use that as your answer for the next interview, right?
Facts.
Like, hey, you done learned something from now that you can put in your back pocket, and if you ever get asked that question, you know how you can answer from a professional who is already doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And you just inadvertently got a job just because you just learn from different people, getting all these different aspects of things. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah, and they really can just tap into the show.
Of course he'll say that too, yeah.
No, I just literally did the post with the young lady saying how she got the internship from using the tips she learned on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
I get them posts all the time.
Yeah, it's just listening to things, keeping them in your back pocket, actually understanding why it matters. Like, all that helps to close the gap.
you know, you can also start you a podcast, start you a talk show.
Yeah.
But you got to stay consistent with your talk show.
Yeah, you got to do all. You can do all.
Yeah, like, I see people, I'm looking at him.
Like, but I'm saying, people like to say, I don't believe in this. People like to say your brand is what, you know, gets you job. I don't care for, like, everybody's not going to be a social media guru. Well, you know,
I'm a agree and disagree, because I don't think you got to be a guru to have a brand on Netflix. I mean, not Netflix, on LinkedIn. I don't think you have to have be an influencer, because do you consider yourself to be an influencer?
No.
But I think you have a brand of knowing about security.
I don't think so. I mean,
I think you do. If we go to your post, but most of your post about hiring and different things you learn.
Yeah, like things I'm learning, but it's like anybody can do that.
But I don't think that makes you an influencer. An influencer is a person that's probably actually starts getting paid to influence people. I think that's the difference, right? Because there's people that don't make any money from. They just post the stuff, they go. But people know, hey, this person worked at whatever, and they developed these couple of things, and they post them. I think, like, Tavion posted some detection he worked on through GitHub for people. Right? Stuff like that is like, oh, okay. I know this dude could do it. He literally, these are like five things he posted. We used them in our environment. Let's try to scoop them. Let's try to steal them away. Like, stuff like that. That's what I was saying, where I feel like you have a brand of knowing what you're doing versus not having that brand.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that can just come from just making posts. Like, hey, I learned this today doing this lab, right? I mean, from the aspect of branding, people think of like a big brand, like, hey, like a YouTube page or a, you know, somebody who got like 20,000 followers on Instagram or something like that, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, me, I don't care for all that stuff. So
we know, man. He's just a cool guy.
I just be chilling, man.
Ain't that meme said? Just a cool guy, a cool dude, whatever it said.
Yeah, man. I just be chilling and stuff. So, yeah.
So what you think the state of cyber is in general? Like, I know you're talking about all the different things you could talk about. One of the things that companies don't talk, well, not companies, but podcasts or anybody else, they rarely talk about this, and it's one of the more susceptible things that we don't think about. Our critical infrastructure, utilities, all these different things are always getting pretty much attacked by nation threats.
Yeah.
Like, we never talk about, hey, what's going to happen if somebody take down the energy grid? What's going to happen if somebody hack all the traffic lights?
I mean, I seen like, you know, different, like, gov agencies talk about that type of stuff. But it's like, what are you actually going to do about it? Because, as we already know, the critical infrastructure is built on outdated technologies, and
or we go into different things. Like, for example, the Change Healthcare breach pretty much happened because mergers and acquisitions, not really doing your due diligence or compliance and finding the servers that don't have, like, you know, the wrong passwords, no multi-factor authentication, all those different things. What happens when it goes from an actual, like, healthcare prescription company to the actual hospital? And now the hospital actually hacked and people dying.
I mean, we call that supply chain, don't we? Yeah.
I don't know if it's supply chain, because you're going directly to the hospital. I think it would be supply chain.
I thought you were saying that the sub company.
No, I'm saying Change Healthcare would be more of like probably like a supply chain because of how they interact with hospitals and everywhere else with the prescription. But I'm talking about somebody go hack Baylor Scott and White. And now people can't have a baby. You can't update no patient records. Like, what happens when we actually get there?
What happens? you see the consequence of not having proper security in place, right? I mean, I would think these places, I've never been in healthcare industry or nothing, but I would think these places will actually have testing of their security controls and adequate logging of these things.
Look at my hand.
Yeah, it's so, but yeah.
They're just hoping that today ain't gonna be them. I think that's what most of them on. Today ain't gonna be them.
And why? But it's like, why though? Like, you can't say you ain't making money. All these insurance claims and shit you're getting, like,
yeah.
Why do you not put the money into actually testing
some
your
infrastructure? Some of them do. I've interviewed with some hospitals where they was like, hey, budget is not a problem. We got a $5 million budget to do XYZ.
And okay, great. How are you putting the budget towards the right things? Not just looking good and sounding good.
I agree. That's what most people talk a good game, and you get there and like, man, what is this?
Yeah, like, when the last time you actually did a real assessment on these devices and this network? Have you tested it from a, you know, a threat actor perspective of, okay, what is like the threat intel? Also, like, what is the threat intel of this place? Like, that part, who just targets about, like, this place?
Well, we're talking about infrastructure, segmentation. Hey, do you have all these things segmented to where, if the hospital do get compromised, these specific internet machines that run on the internet, they are fine to keep on giving people whatever they need so they don't go down? Because if they go down...
Yeah, it's like, when and how are you testing these things? Yeah, we don't. Like, why? There's no real good reason as to why, other than they know it's vulnerable and they just don't need to be proven that it's vulnerable. Right. So
one of the things we didn't talk about is how, I believe, also an instructor, right?
Yeah.
QRIQ?
Yeah.
How's it feel being a professor?
I wouldn't call it that.
How's it feel being an instructor?
Being a professor, it's not, it's just sharing what I know. I think a professor is like...
I know, I'm being funny.
Yeah, it's like, it's just...
That got a good ring to it, though. Professor Lee.
Did
you get your master's from WGU, didn't you?
Yeah.
Go ahead and get that doctorate, Dr. Lee.
I'm straight. Chilling, I'm good,
see?
I'm straight.
She was like, Dr. Lee, good. Chilling, good on
I'm
you.
Good, I'm straight, man. I'm good on it. Yeah, I'm done with school, so gladly.
I think that's for now. Like, I think everybody said they done, and then they get bored, say, man, I'm finna get a doctorate.
I ain't never that bored to go back to no for no doctorate.
That's mostly, I mean, it's going to be sexist, but mostly women do that, though. Ain't got nothing to do, so I'm just going to go back to school.
In tech, you never that bored. It's always something to do if you're really looking in the right places to do stuff.
It depends on what level you're at. Remember, we talk about the 63-year-old man. Maybe you 50-something, you don't want to, I just want to challenge myself, see if I can get a doctorate.
Hey, speaking of that, I remember in the last job, they said they had the person that was there before me was an older guy who had just got his doctorate. The only reason why he was working was to pay off his doctorate. Older guy walked real slow, so the guy was like, anytime we had to go to a meeting, we had to leave like 25 minutes ahead of time to, you know, walk with the guy, make sure he don't fall, and he walked real slow.
But he had no scooter at the job.
Man, I don't know, but I don't know all those details, and then they say he was real smart, theoretically, but as soon as you ask him to do anything, because it's an engineering position, he couldn't do nothing. Couldn't even log into his Google Workspace account properly. Like, this is a doctor in cybersecurity. That's what I'm telling folks. Like, it you got to be able to. The tech field is a doing field. It's not a talking. I mean, yeah, you got to know how to talk, but I still put the emphasis on being able to do stuff. You got to be able to do stuff. Stuff that actually makes a difference.
I agree. What do you think is next for Dr. Lee in 2026?
You're the doctor guy. You do all the talking, and so you're the doctor.
Mr. Lee, I mean.
Yeah.
What is next for Memphis Finest?
This guy right here. we're going to find out, man.
Working on? Like,
yeah, Mildev. Mildev Academy. A lot of people told me to get on that, so I'm going to get on that.
I'm saying, what else outside are you working on? Like, how can people, since I got to help you market yourself.
Marketing myself.
How do people get access to do your CTF that you got for people?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to put that on my LinkedIn. I need to make one of those like Linktree things so I can, because I got an RMF automation course. So people who still find an interest in doing RMF.
You should do that with Coursera.
However that looks, I mean, I'm willing to do it, but learning automation and RMF, the tools needed, I got that in my bio on LinkedIn. So, if you find that stuff interesting, it's there. My GitHub has my basic CTF stuff, but I might say that for when we do that thing that we talked about for, you know, some giveaway stuff. So, outside of that, just keeping on trying to make good recommendations for people to start their tech careers or excel their tech careers if they already doing it. That's really it.
And how do the listeners keep up with you if they want to follow you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, that's my name. That's like Lee Clayton 95, I think, in a web browser, but yeah.
So if they type in Lee Clayton on LinkedIn, they'll find you?
Yeah, it should. I mean, it's not too many of them. Not too many of them, especially looking like me. So,
and then he's also in the Black IT Network group. So if you see him on there, holler.
Do people actually know about this group on this?
Yeah, I guarantee they know. There's so many people in there. I'll be finding out I'm in a group with people, and they'll tell me. So it's a lot of Black people in that group.
I mean, it's a lot of Black people, but I'm talking about your watchers. Oh, yeah. They know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they on Facebook. They on the Book of Face.
Yeah, Discord too, you know. Tell them to join your textual chat or Discord channel.
Yeah, man, he in the Discord. He's Krillin_25.
Krillin? No. This guy.
Yeah, nobody finna call you no Lord B.
Yeah, that's the best one. Hey, that's what we just watched yesterday, man.
Well, this boy more, you know, Lord B. You might be Lord Jace or something.
Why are you hating?
Lord Berta.
He hating.
Oh, man.
It's okay to be a hater, bro.
I know. I'm the biggest hater. That's what Kendrick Lamar said. But
now I just heard a Discord notification.
Yeah, that's my computer. But no, man, I appreciate everybody for tuning in. Y'all know how to stay in touch with me, the Discord. Follow me on all my socials, Textual Chatter. Or check us out on the actual podcast page, textualtalk.com. Ladies and gentlemen, This might be one of the next, or it might be the last podcast episode y'all see this year. I don't know, but if it is, like I said, Happy New Year. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, again, Mr. Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, stay cool out there because it's hot as fuck up in here.
And just like that, it's been another episode of Textual Chatter, and we out.
Yep. Peace.